And we welcome our political commentators now, Shane Tupou and Ben Thomas. Kia ora kōrua.
Morena.
Kia ora.
Ben Thomas is a PR consultant and a former national government press secretary. Shane Tupou is a former candidate, campaign manager and executive member of the Labour Party and a former union official. He no longer is a member of any political party. Let's begin with the Prime Minister in Europe. A lot of focus, obviously, on trade and the dissatisfaction from sheep and beef and dairy in particular, I think, over how that trade deal is shaping up. But perhaps looming larger is the address, I think, to NATO, or the meeting involving NATO, and some feathers being ruffled, some concerns that this might be a move away from our very neutral foreign policy. Your take on this, Shane?
Yeah, I'm concerned about that, actually. I think that, you know, we've got a growing scrap over territory between the USA and China in terms of the Pacific. I think we can play a constructive role in that, and I think our role can be more constructive. It is independent. Having said that, there are just some political realities to this. We have an alignment on security issues, cyber safety issues with the USA and with some of those NATO partners. So, you know, we are going to have to reconfirm and recommit our relationship with them. The Prime Minister has to get the balance right.
Ben.
Yeah, well, that's right. Traditionally, we have separated out our trade interests from what might be broadly or euphemistically described as our strategic interests, which is to say defence and security. That is becoming a much harder delineation to make. You know, we know that for China, you know, economics trade is not divorced or kept separate from their strategic interests and their expansionism and their regional ambitions, I suppose we would say, in terms of things that interest New Zealand. For this reason, you know, there's not actually as much of a line between the trade mission to the EU to try and get that FTA sort of, you know, some new life breathed into that, and, you know, turning up at what is actually, you know, a military alliance, NATO, which, you know, probably would have been unthinkable, you know, even 10 years ago for New Zealand.
But we have been working with NATO on a whole lot of levels. This is the first time, as I understand it, a prime minister's been asked to attend, as other prime ministers and other leaders. For them, it's the first time, such as the case of Australia. But that at a lower level, particularly in the foreign ministry level, this is not unusual or uncommon.
That's where the symbolism sits, though, isn't it? When the prime minister is invited.
Yeah, levels of usualness and unusualness depend a lot on hierarchy in foreign affairs. And sending the Prime Minister is very different from sort of back-channel talks between intelligence officials, for example. So, you know, increasingly it looks as though the way things are going, that in terms of our regional interests and our global interests, strategic concerns and economic concerns will be much more closely intertwined. And that does drive us more towards our traditional partners in the West.
It's also, as you say, there's a free trade deal being discussed at the exact same time. I wouldn't want to draw too long a bow over whether that helps or hinders what are always very complex and detailed negotiations, and that have a large dose of domestic politics attached. But, you know, it is interesting timing on that front, and I think your point is right, that the traditional trade relationships are now being, shall we say, perhaps firmed up alongside the shifting security environment.
And the problem we have, is that many of the European Union members and the USA, for that matter, are very protectionist in nature when it comes to trade, particularly around dairy, meat products, etc. So, you know, it's going to be a very difficult. It's going to be a very difficult road for the Prime Minister to get the balance right, given all of those factors. And I just don't simply see the some countries like France and the USA opening up on those issues when it comes to trade.
We've also had this new foray by the United States into this sort of Pacific partnership, and we're not clear yet exactly what form that is going to take. That is where the Prime Minister has expressed she has hopes for some advanced economic gains somehow, vis-a-vis the United States. But again, is this a sudden turn, or has it been just sped up by the events of the last few months, Ben?
Well, I think we started to see, you know, particularly on defence, the Defence Force and the Minister Ron Mark under the previous iteration of this government with New Zealand First did, you know, much more sharply sort of signal a turn back to the United States in particular, you know, and the West. I think you know, events have really pushed things along. I think that, you know, we were caught by surprise by the sort of speed of the expansion by China, particularly diplomatically. And, you know, whether we should have been surprised or not is, you know, another matter. But at that government level, yeah, I think that, you know, we're certainly seeing an acceleration now after a long period of really kind of trying to sort of, you know, have our cake and eat it too. Or, you know, as Shane said, get the balance right. And it may turn out to be that, you know, we don't get to decide where the balance is and that there's no quite correct answer.
Shane, when we were talking with Patrick Smalley about the PM's visit, the trade visit last Tuesday, he made the point that she's got a choice here. The extent to which it is a choice is debatable, which is to not sign that agreement and to say, no, go away and do some more work. However, the domestic politics would be along the lines of, you know, for most people not knowing the minutiae of a trade deal, it would be a ticked box. And if she doesn't sign it, if she holds back and says, no, go back and do more work, does she open herself up to an attack by the opposition? Do you believe she has a choice?
No, I think she has a choice, but it's going to be how we get there is going to be difficult. Part of the problem we've had when it's come to the America and this part of the world, they've been in and out. You know, they've been involved and then they haven't been involved. So we want to see a more consistent approach. And I think we've seen some benefit over the last and some movement over the last month or so with Senator Wong coming down to New Zealand from Australia and a greater alignment. So I just think that that Pacific partnership and Australia's sort of rekindled sort of relationship with New Zealand on these issues will see us in a stronger position as we face NATO, the US and the EU.
And for you, Ben, does she have a choice with respect specifically to that EU trade deal?
Well,
she said this morning all options are on the table.
Yeah, all options are on the table. I mean, there is certainly an incentive to open up new trade routes as soon as possible. You know, the last couple of years have shown, you know, how volatile trade can be, and any kind of continuation of that sort of drop that we've seen recently in the first quarter of this year, you know, that has big effects on New Zealand's economy. And so I think you would probably be erring towards more options than fewer. At the same time, you know, I don't know that the domestic pressure issue is particularly relevant. You know, I think we saw with the visit to the United States that, you know, while gas prices are high here, while people are struggling with cost of living, there's not too much of an impact, you know, in terms of these overseas engagements.
Okay. Let's look at
I also think that the EU will be very keen to try and get as many deals over the line as possible. We've already got an FTA with the UK, so you know the EU wants greater sort of global collaboration. I think that they will be just as keen to do a deal as we are.
They're just not liking the primary industries here are not liking the deal that they're looking at the moment. Let's look at the impact of Roe v. Wade on domestic politics to the extent that there is any. And the obvious impact is a lot of people in the wake of the overturning of that 50-year protection for women's rights, reproductive rights, have come straight back to political parties here and said, where do you stand on this? Now, it's one thing to say, oh, it's a different system in the United States, it's constitutional, it's all gone through the Supreme Court. That's not what people are asking. And Ben, what do you make of how National has handled this in particular, given it has a number of quite conservative, socially conservative and faith-based MPs? And second, the fact that one of them posted on Facebook yesterday, or I think the day before, and then, you know, it's a good day today, and then that was removed. To what extent is this going to cause a bit of friction either within the party or beyond?
Well, this is a problem for National in the sense that, you know, this question has been asked of Christopher Luxon repeatedly, not just since he became leader, but beforehand, because of his sort of background in faith. I think he's kept a pretty consistent line on it, saying that, you know, no government he leads will revisit this issue, that, you know, he considers the matter debated and settled by the last parliament. But at the same time, you know, he's started issuing sort of more fulsome, more detailed, reassurances and guarantees. And initially, of course, you know, his reaction was to say, look, this is a different country, which is totally correct. But then people would say, well, what about abortion funding? What about, you know, these sorts of things? So it gives the appearance of, you know, some sort of wishy-washiness in this, which I don't think is necessarily fair. But it does keep prompting questions. And what it does is it requires firmer and firmer statements, which, you know, about his sort of personal attitudes to these things that might rub up some National supporters the wrong way. You know, there's a strong majority for abortion access in New Zealand, and that's why, you know, neither of the parties.
There is in the United States as well, and that's the issue.
We could get into the side issue of, you know, whether we should be thinking more about the government's legislation to formalise the court's ability to declare legislation inconsistent with the Bill of Rights here and refer it back to Parliament, because I don't necessarily think that the United States is a particularly good advertisement for giving unelected officials power over legislation or the ability to strike it down or defer it as the current legislation would suggest.
What do you see as the issue, Shane? Sorry, Ben, I'll come back to you. What do you see?
Look, I like being on a Sunday afternoon, I'm a Twitter tragic, and I was following it as Ben was, and I was commenting on it as Ben was. It was clumsy, and it took him three attempts to get it right. His first statement was basically got nothing to do with us. Look the other way. This is not an issue in New Zealand. You know, I think that many people will be concerned what's happening in the United States and what it could well lead to. I think equity around gay rights on the agenda, and crazy enough, for perhaps interracial marriage as they move towards more of a position on states' rights.
No, now, just to clarify, we're talking about the United States.
Yeah, we are talking about the United States.
I get that. But his first comment was clumsy, and this is the reason. This is the reason why his fundamental religious beliefs are opposed to his political position. And when leaders try to balance that, they get it terribly wrong. I think he got it wrong.
I don't think that's true, though, is it? Because we've had prime ministers in the past and deputy prime ministers like Jim Anderton who have been very frank about their belief in the sanctity of the life of the unborn child, but it doesn't lead to legislative change or attempts at legislative change because they buy into the idea that we live in a pluralistic society where you have to accommodate all kinds of different beliefs and you don't force religious beliefs on the rest of society. Jim Bulger didn't try and ban abortion.
One at a time.
Bill English didn't try and ban abortion. I don't see any particular reason why you would believe that Chris Luxon, who's been about as consistent as you could be on this issue, is somehow lying or conspiring.
In my lifetime,
I have not heard a political leader, and we're not talking about someone who might be a deputy or might be in cabinet. We're talking about someone who could possibly be the next prime minister of New Zealand that has aligned choice with murder.
Look, he was asked the question and he answered it, and that's something, at least. I think that the issue I want to explore is, and this sort of coincides with Peter Goodfellow departing as president of the National Party, although apparently wanting to stay on the board, that you have ended up with a comparatively small caucus for National, with a number of key seats held by, shall we say, socially conservative MPs. And this has come back to the observable lack of diversity in its caucus and how it got there. Now, what that leads to, I'm not suggesting for a moment that leads to some kind of radical law change or policy change. It's more what it means if there's chafing at the bit within that caucus, Ben, over being told, you know, take this off Facebook, or I don't like the way you've worded this. And second, it just highlights again how they're going to go into the election with a caucus, an existing caucus, that is not particularly diverse.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will be something to watch, you know, for people who are sort of jumping at shadows about the kind of conservative takeover of the National Party. We'll be looking at, you know, selections and safe national seats. I think the... You know, there is a marriage, I suppose, between the Conservatives and the Liberals in National. You know, the fact that there's a division there means that you're very, very unlikely, you know, even if there was a will from the leadership at any point, to get the sort of numbers that you would need for sort of regressive social reform.
Again, you've lost a lot of those Liberals, but again, it's not suggesting the reform would come on the agenda. It is highlighting an uncomfortable fact for that party at the moment, which is its lack of diversity by all measures.
Well, no, I mean, I think the caucus actually probably became a bit more liberal in terms of percentages and proportions after the election. You know, you lost, sure, people like
Nikki Kaye, Amy Adams,
O'Connor,
so
yeah,
forth.
but also Alfred Nardo, initially Hariti Hapango before she came back. So, you know, it's all a bit of swings and roundabouts. You know, the most important thing here, I think, in terms of thinking about the individual MPs' motivations, will be winning an election. And when you're riding high in the polls, as Christopher Luxon has been, you have a lot of say over how your party is running.
Can we talk a little bit about... last say, Shane, we need to move on. Yep.
My last say is this. I think there is an issue. I think they need to particularly sort out Connor. Viti has got a fundamental perspective in terms of these type of issues. It's an internal debate that National Party has to have, and all eyes will be, and rightfully so, in terms of candidates.
It's a conscience issue, remember, in New Zealand, and people are entitled to their views. The issue is not with any of these MPs' views. It's the fact that proportionately there are a lot of them within the broad church of the National Party in this current caucus, and that is a consequence of two things: their election result last time, but also list placings last time. So let's just quickly look now at Peter Goodfellow's departure. What do you make of Maurice Williamson, seldom short of a word? I recall him at one party conference being the conference off on the sidelines, but he's appalled at the way this has unfolded, Ben.
You'd have to say it's a little disingenuous for Goodfellow to say that he won't be seeking the nomination again, won't be seeking to be president again, which is a board appointment, but only after nominations to the board had closed. And I understand that he reassured some people even a week earlier that he would be standing again. So, you know, you can take the politician out of politics, is that it? Yeah, look, I don't think, you know, it's not a particularly good send-off as president. He's had a pretty mixed last few years.
Terrible.
He's trying to be diplomatic, I think it's not clear whether there was any one sort of precipitating event, or it seems like it was more as if he sort of, you know, saw which way the wind was blowing. His big pitch to the National Party has always been, I can fundraise, I can bring in the cash. You know, if you read the New Zealand Herald, you'll see that Paula Bennett, who doesn't even have an official position within the party, has been apparently bringing in bundles of cash from donors. And it probably turns out that donors go for winners rather than party president fundraisers.
Shane, your take on it.
I can I think National can fix this very quickly. There will be a change of presidency. Why they would want him to hang around on the board, I don't know. Let's just remember he oversaw some catastrophic selections, the worst result ever. Normally what happens in those type of circumstances, the president has the good grace to leave. This guy didn't, and the National Party needs to cleanse themselves of him totally, not just partially.
And they'll take their advice from a Labour supporter, I'm sure. But, but they'll be having that debate.
But having said that, if it was a Labour president or Labour council, it's the same advice I would give them.
Sure thing. Look, let's leave the health stuff till next week because we are awaiting the official launch of the reforms. And right as that is due, a lot of pressure on the health minister now, just everyday headlines and just beyond crisis, it seems, parts of our health sector. And some saying, taiho on these reforms right now. That'll be stuff for us to discuss next week. Thanks, both of you, Shane Tupou and Ben Thomas.